Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot.
Broadcasting from the lush but not luxurious, well, I don't have my notes in front of me. You would think after all the times I said that, I would remember. And then in my head, I'm like,
memorized.
But we're not there. And so then I got all kerfluffled.
All flustered.
So I am on the road. And so we're all at undisclosed locations, except I'm in Carmel, California.
I guess, you know what? They can't find you. By the time this episode comes out, you'll be back here.
That's true. I don't have the money to stay here that long.
I have to take my radiation medication because I'm in the radioactive bunker once again.
There we go. So let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And joining us today, also via the magic of ZoomTube, is Rachel Wagner. Hey, Rachel. How's it going?
Hi, everybody. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. So I guess with all my confusion, I never actually said the name of the movie, which is Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And so we thought rather than having three dudes sit around talking about quite possibly the most famous female-driven young adult novel of all time.
I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah. Although I guess that would have its own charm if we're not just completely about it.
Yeah, it depends. We'll see how this goes.
Yeah, it depends on how the movie goes, how the podcast goes, I guess.
Yeah. So we thought we would bring in a voice of reason.
I'll do my best.
I honestly, after seeing this movie, even though I haven't heard your guys' opinions, I don't think we're going to have any problem with this delightful film.
No.
I don't think so either. No. No. So normally this is where we do League of Show Shares, but because I'm on a trip, I forgot to do it. So we will do those next week. But thank you for sharing. I just can't thank you individually like we normally do. But you can
Chris
also
Magic Man, Chris Falls,
the Chris Trifecta,
So you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Don't forget to find us wherever you get your podcasts and maybe follow us or leave us a review. That's always helpful. And of course, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content and we like you extra. So
What did we just drop? Iron Man?
Oh, on the Patreon? So we're starting I posted it in the group as well, but in case you didn't see it, since we weren't around for MCU Phase 1, we started with Man of Steel and with Phase 2. So we're going back on the Patreon, Matt, Joe, myself, and we're going to talk about all the Phase 1 stuff. So if you want to hear us talk about that and, you know, want to go back 25 movies now and with us, then join us over on Patreon.
There you go.
So you're doing DC as well?
No. We did
Man of Steel.
Yeah,
we started with that was our first
episode.
That
was our first episode.
Yeah, so that was 10 years ago almost now. And so I'm not going to spoil what's coming, but 10 years is coming, and that does coincide with something interesting in the DC universe. So
that's very true.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Zack Snyder will be on
the show.
We don't
have to watch Man of Steel again, do we?
Yeah, it's our third watch through and review. Well, Tom just spoiled it. We may as well say it now. So get your Blu-rays, pop them in.
So anyway, I guess let's jump into the movie proper. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. So has anyone read the book?
No. I mean, I know that it exists.
The right guess.
I know. Obviously, it was. I remember.
We knew the answer would be no for Joe because it's
right.
A book.
I don't read.
Right.
Comic books don't count. Funny pictures.
Yeah. The funny pages.
It's actually a really quick read. On Audible, it's only 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
So, wow.
Yeah.
How close does the movie follow the book?
Pretty close. Like, you get to know some of the, like, her parents, I think, a little bit more. And there's just a little bit more kind of padding out in the movie. But it's pretty close.
Okay.
Without having read the book, that was my guess. Like, I'm like, this feels like it's following the story. This doesn't feel like they're making up things to insert for modern audiences. Or, like, we need an action scene or a wacky comedy scene.
Yeah, I like that they set it in the time period, right? So the book came out in, was it 1970?
I do, too.
And it takes place in that time. They didn't have to modernize it. And it's cool to capture that slice of life, and the kids aren't on their phones, and they're playing outside, and they have a club and all that stuff. But it also, at the same time, is so completely relatable, I think. I mean, even though I didn't have maybe the same experiences, but I was still a kid, and I still remember what it was like, you know, if you had a crush on someone, or interacting, or going to one of those social events, like a party or whatnot. And
The mixers, seventh and eighth grade mixers were the worst.
Yeah, it just feels so completely relatable. And I went back and read the plot synopsis of the book of it, and it followed beat for beat for beat with the movie. So I appreciate how true to it they stayed, even though it was 50 years ago. But there's nothing, in my opinion, there's nothing they need to modernize, because these experiences are universal and timeless.
In the book, is the religion thing a thing in the book?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, it follows when
it's,
I was reading.
Are you there, God? It's me, Mark.
Oh no, no. I mean the
parents,
like the parents, and like the strife between
the mixed,
like,
marriage,
the sets of parents and stuff that. Okay. Yeah. Yes, I know. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. Thank you, Rachel.
and
although taking shots at Joe right out of the gate, like,
no, well done, absolutely,
she's fitting in quite nice.
This is a good episode. Yeah. So we don't obviously cover a lot of religious fare here, but man, I love how this movie covers religion, because it's not a religious movie, right? It's not a God's not dead or whatever. You know,
it's not a faith-based film. And I've gotten a lot of people saying things, like, when they've read my review, that they're like, oh, we knew you'd like it because you're religious. And I'm like, oh, no. It's really not. It's not a faith-based film. No. It's not like, religion is just a part of growing up. It's part of, like, even if you decide not to believe, like, every person, I think, goes through some kind of reckoning of what they want to believe. And so that's all this is.
I would think for a lot of religious people, they wouldn't like the movie because they want her to pick a side, and she ends up kind of not. And so I would think a lot of people there are certain religious people, not all, that would not like the idea that she didn't pick a side.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's forcing it upon you. So that's the difference. Most faith-based films, the reason they're made is to, even if someone is wavering in their beliefs or their faiths, they get there in the end, right? The whole point of it is, oh, you had faith, and it's they're made for the purpose of, you know, the end is like, I found my faith. And she kind of does in the end in her own way, but it never feels like it's pushing religion on you. And it does give her the option to view all these different types of religion. And I just really liked that, how it didn't feel preachy, it didn't feel forced, and I really like how the character got to decide for herself.
It was interesting to see her kind of a blank slate, right? Like, she knows the term Judaism, and she knows the term, like, Christianity? But she, I was like, in my head, I was like Catholic, but that's the other, that's not it.
Well, that is a form of Christianity.
Yes, I know that's one of them, but I was like, that's not what her parents were.
But she didn't have any preconceived notions because her parents kept her away from it completely. So she got to show up and she's like, you know, like, and she goes to the synagogue and she's like, I mean, everyone seems nice, but I couldn't understand anything. And like, she just, it was that blank slate where it's like, she had these very relatable feelings from someone experiencing things that they never had before. And it was interesting.
Yeah.
This movie hit me in a way that I was not expecting at all.
With two young daughters?
I was a blubbering mess at the end of this movie for hours. I'm not even making that up.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't help that the main character looks almost identical to my daughter.
I was thinking the same thing as Bella. It's like, she looks a lot like
her. She looks just like Bella. And it was really hard for me to watch Margaret go through everything she was going through and knowing that my daughter, now granted it's 2023, so it's going to be a little bit different, but like all of those things that I can't fix, right? Like, as a, there's going to come a point where she's going to have to deal with things on her own. And that, like, sorry, Rachel, it kicked me in the and I legit, like, I cried from the second the movie was up. Not even, the movie wasn't even over. And like, it was towards the end, and then I cried all the way through the credits. I cried all the way home. And then, of course, my daughter is sitting on the couch, and I'm walking in, and my eyes are all bloodshot. And she was like, what's wrong with you?
It's you. It's your fault.
I know. It's all your fault. But like, this,
so you didn't take them to see this movie?
Well, I had to see it during the day, and they were in school.
Oh, you saw it on a weekday. Okay.
Yeah. Like a crazy person.
And now I just got to ask, have you ever pulled them out of school to see a Marvel movie?
No.
Okay.
Oh.
No. We use if there's something we're gonna see, it'll be on like a Friday night or a Saturday morning.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that because I loved the movie. I gave it a perfect score, which I rarely do, but I just felt like I had almost no critiques.
No. I don't know what you would fix in this movie.
Yeah. But I was kind of bummed coming out of the movie because I was overhearing there was like two women and looked like they're like, and then two daughters and two younger, and they were talking and they were like, I could never get my husband to come see this movie. This is a girls only movie. And I was so bummed by that because I just feel like I could get my dad to see this movie. He has four daughters and he could appreciate it. And be,
you are not wrong.
I don't know. I don't feel like just because this movie is about a young woman shouldn't make it only a girls only movie.
If we can watch Parasite without being Korean, we can go see Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Yeah, it's not really a good excuse when people, I think that's the problem, is that people are too close-minded in general today. And you get people that say something like that where it's like, Judy Blume had a great quote. She actually has a new documentary on Amazon Prime you can watch, and
so
I didn't finish it. I only watched the first half, but I just kind of wanted to hear her talk. And she had a letter. She would answer all her fan letters that people would write to her, which is awesome. And one of the girls said something about like, oh, boys are reading this book that I like, and she felt a little uneasy. And Judy Blume answered back and she's like, I think that's good. I think girls should read the same books as boys, and it does is help us understand one another because we're all human and we're all going through these things together. And I think that's a perfect thing to apply to this film too, is that these are topics that affect a lot of people, and just because it may not affect you directly, there are still things to relate to, whether it be the other kids in her class that are boys, if you identify that way, the father, like the Benny Safdie character. Mm-hmm. I think as a father I can relate to him and the way he was dealing with his kids and his family.
When Rachel McAdams, who I think is amazing in this movie,
she's so good in this. Yeah,
when she has to tell him that her parents are coming, the way he handles that, like, I've had arguments like that where it's like I am livid, but I also can see that like my wife is between a rock and a hard place, right?
That's a really tough scene.
And while I am beside myself, but I also have to, like, you know, take a pause and realize maybe, you know, she didn't do it out of spite, but
no. Well, it's a very unselfish thing. And I think Benny Safdie handles it wonderfully. I love getting to see him in these roles. Like, of course, he and his brother Josh are the Safdie brothers. They directed Good Time, Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler. But Benny pops up in these acting roles. He was recently in Obi-Wan as a character in the series. It's just great seeing him pop up in these roles, and he's really good. And the way he handles that scene, because you have to be so unselfish, because clearly, obviously, he was hurt by what her parents
were awful to him.
I mean, her parents disowned both of them, and basically their daughter more specifically, because she married a Jewish guy. And then, of course, how is he not going to carry that guilt of like, well, I'm the reason that your parents disowned you. And so he is living with all that. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, she wants to repair this relationship, and now that means that he has to see them and talk to them, these people that he obviously has a lot of feelings about and a lot of hurt from. And so I think that was extremely tough, but both of these characters are such good people. They don't paint either of them as bad guys. Neither of them does something to hurt the other one, even unintentionally. I love that both these characters are really good people and a really strong example of a relationship and making sacrifices for one another.
They felt very real.
Mm-hmm.
Like as they felt like real people. I think that's the advantage I think this cast has, is everybody feels real. Like they feel like real people that you knew at one point or another. The other thing that I noticed is they don't make movies like this anymore. They don't make coming of age stories for preteens, right? Like those. Go ahead, Rachel. I'm sorry.
Well, also, so many of the teen stories that we get these days are just this trope of the teenage character that is just miserable and sulking. And I mean, it reached an apex last year with the whale. That teenage character in movie, I hated that character.
We all did.
So much.
I just hated the movie.
And it's just, I'm so tired of it, because it just robs these. I understand that being a teenager is hard. I was a, you know, bratty teenager in my day. But like, you're not a monster. Like, you have moments of humanity, you know, like, and I'm just so tired of that. And so to have like a character with nuance that was fleshed out that I could relate to, that had her sulking moments. She had her, you know, tough moments. She wasn't communicating with her parents, but sweet moments as well. And so that's, to me, it was extremely refreshing. And I especially loved anything with her grandma, with Kathy Bates.
She was so good.
I absolutely loved it. Every time she reminded me of my grandma, who I miss so much. And just that whole, like, kind of geeking out together and having fun. And that brought back a lot of memories.
When she comes home from Florida, I knew she was going to. And I'm like, yeah, Grandma, get him. Like, I expected, and I was actually hoping for, and maybe this isn't a little bit different of a movie, but I was expecting more of a fight. I was expecting Grandma to say, I mean, she kind of did, but it was in passing. But, like, I've been here for her whole life, you know? And it's like that grandma was there, and to what those parents did to her daughter, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about that. It was just terrible. It was terrible to disown your child because of who they want to be with. And I think Kathy Bates could have said a lot more in that scene.
It's also what makes this movie so good and so different, is that you don't get that movie where, like, you get to feed into the moral superiority that the audience wants to feel this rousing speech, because it's not typically how life is going to work, right?
Sure.
It's like, because in real life, you know, I mean, I'm not saying no one ever says anything stupid, but a lot of times, I think more often than not, the grandma in that situation is going to be like, well, I don't want to make it worse. I don't want to make this kid feel bad.
I don't
want to make this kid feel like she has to choose. So, like, I'm just going to bite my tongue, not entirely successfully, but
a little passive aggressively.
But for the most part, I'm going to bite my tongue, you know?
I love that she was there for her, because she knew, I mean, the whole thing was she was going to visit her in Florida and she was looking forward to it. And then her parents thrust her in this uncomfortable position and she was already having a hard time. And then she came home to be with her and she was so excited to see her and made her feel more comfortable in what would have been a very uncomfortable situation either way. Mm-hmm. So I really liked it. And like Rachel, I loved that character.
Well, it was also a really, like, lousy thing to do to, like, take the Florida trip away from her in
terms of, like, very lousy.
Hey, these people who've never given two squirts a piss about you decided to show up when you have this other cool thing planned, and so now you don't get to do the cool thing because you have to sit in a room in awkward silence.
It's funny to watch art imitating life, where it's one of those things where, you know, there are aspects of my life that I've had to change, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't please everyone, and setting boundaries, I guess, is the best way to put it. Setting boundaries with family members that maybe don't always listen to boundaries. And watching Rachel McAdams have to, like, navigate this when she has not had to put up any boundaries, and now she can't because it's just not in her nature to say no.
Yeah.
You know, well, she also doesn't know what their motivation is, right?
That's
like, she's like, well, it has been, you know, 12 years.
Maybe they've changed.
Maybe they've changed, right.
Maybe they've realized the mistake they made. Maybe they're going to be different. And I guess it's probably been longer than 12 years because that's how old Margaret is, right? But, like,
sure.
They didn't get married the day she was born.
No, I think they said four. I don't know why I have 14 in my head, but I think it was something like 14.
I saw
years.
This movie like 2 weeks ago. So,
oh, right on.
Yeah. Yeah. But
no, she's 11.
She's 11.
Oh,
okay.
Margaret's 11? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I was going to nitpick, I do feel like that those grandparents would not be asking her about Sunday school on the first dinner if they were really trying to, like,
I don't think they really were. I think they showed up to, like, get an in to try to then force their ways on them once again
and
control
them. But I
think that
if they were smart, they would wait and build up that relationship and then ask her. But maybe they're stupid.
If
I don't know.
If they were smart. I think people that disown their daughter because they're unaccepting of other people are not, quote unquote, smart. And that's the thing. Like, people are different. And to try to force something like that on it and say, if you don't believe what we believe, we're going to disown you. That is, I have no respect.
Or if you're going to marry this guy who is of a different religion, you know, and of a different world. And if you marry him, you're out. Or we're not going to... Did they say that, like, we'll disown you, or was she just like, I'm not going to put up with your bigotry? Did they say,
no,
like, you're
out?
No,
they said you're not going to be our daughter or something like that. Okay. They completely disowned her and told her they were going to.
And so I didn't read the scene as they necessarily showed up to grill her about Sunday school. I saw it more as, like, they found themselves in that moment, and they just couldn't stop.
That's what I agree with.
Right, they couldn't help themselves,
right. Like, they're just so focused on their own stuff. That, like, I honestly don't think they showed up to, like, we've got to bring this girl, you know, back from the dark side. I think that they were trying to reestablish communications and like, honestly, like, they don't know what the hell else to talk about.
That's
And so
they don't know these people anymore.
Yeah,
right?
not at all.
Their daughter is not the same person.
And I think we also need to keep in mind. For these grandparents, because, like, even though, you know, it's 2023 for us, it's 1970 for them.
The 1950.
And also, it's like these two were probably born in, like, I mean, there's a chance they were born in the
1800s. That's right. Oh.
Like, if
I
they're in their
70s. Yeah, that's
so
fair.
Like, you know, but best case scenario, they were born in the early 1900s.
Right.
So, like, they grew up in a very, very different world. And so, and I don't mean to say, like, so it's okay.
No,
but
that's like when my grandmother would use certain terms and we're just like,
yeah,
you can't do that. What do you can't say that?
It's important to contextualize that we're looking at it through modern eyes, and I completely agree, but it also shows you how hard of a time people had. Look at this was just 50 years ago, which may sound like a lot to some people, but also at the same time,
as someone who's 52, it doesn't sound long ago at all, Kevin.
Right. So at the same time, it doesn't seem that long, and look how much things have changed. And so I agree that they definitely have a lot different mindset and came from an older time, but it just shows you, like, people willing to distance themselves from their own family just because of who they love and what they decide to believe in. And those same people that would do that to their daughter, I had no question that they would try to do it again. Like, there was no way that they would have changed their ways. And it was a good scene. I liked it. I liked the way the parents handled it. And even though I said, like, you know, I was on Kathy Bates' side and I wanted her to lay into him, but it was still really good.
Yeah. Yeah, such good characters. What did you all think of Nancy as a character? I think she was an interesting character.
Go ahead.
She's like a friend to her. She's a good friend in many ways. And there's like the sweet scene when she gets her period and you feel for her there. But then she's so rude to the tall girl. I forget her name. And she can be so dismissive. And
there was she has a line the first time she meets Margaret where she's like, I'm Nancy. I live in the bigger house.
Right.
And it's like, it's such a simple line, but it does kind of give you an idea of maybe how Nancy is raised.
Look at the parents, right? It's
totally
Nancy,
totally.
And kids are innocent. These things are learned, but
this is that weird age though, where it's like, yes, kids are innocent, but mm-hmm. they're starting to get to that age you can't completely chalk it up to being just a kid, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I think is great, is it's like this transitional movie where it's not a kid's movie and it's not like a high school movie. It's just that spot that
right.
I also make movies like for anymore.
The thing I like the most about that character, though, is that I think in a newer movie and or a lesser movie, she would have flat out been the villain of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep,
and
yep.
And it's a lot more nuanced than that, because like there are aspects of her that are really nice. Like, Margaret has a friend group. She's a new kid. Like, right. Mm-hmm. We kind of gloss over. She gets pulled out of New York City to go live in the suburbs. And so she doesn't have any social circle at all. And so knowing nothing about the movie, I thought, oh, we're going to get the thing where like the kid's the outcast. And
the Rachel McAdams from Mean Girls.
Yeah. And it's like, and that's not where it went at all, which I found interesting and was relieved. But I also thought it was really fascinating that it would have been very easy to turn this character into just a flat-out villain.
Yeah.
And she does some things that are really kind of but she's never flat-out, like, awful. It's like awful adjacent. Yeah.
I think that this all comes back to them. They're kids and they're trying to figure stuff out. I don't think anything Nancy did was intentionally mean, and like Tom said, there were so many things where she was welcoming and instantly wanted her to be a part of their secret club, which only has four people, including Margaret. And I think that she just has a way of talking that she learned from her parents. I think when you see the mother, you can understand how she started to get that attitude and talk the way she does, but I don't think that it was ever ill-intentioned. And I also think that kids in I guess this was for them elementary school, sixth grade, middle school for, my generation. But it's like kids are mean and they're not necessarily trying to be mean or be a villain. But I think that it's still there was humanity in that character where kids do that stuff and they don't realize how mean it is until later in life. And just seemed like them being kids. And I'm not saying that everything she did was right, but I don't think it came from a place of trying to be mean. And it wasn't like a mean girl like there's in these movies, like you guys mentioned. There's usually like the cool group, the mean girl group, and then there's the outsider group and everything. And it's like they were more the outsider group, but you never saw a mean girl.
I'll hang out with Lizzie Kaplan any day of the week.
But there
were
never.
And she was also jealous of, was that the tall girl's name, Lizzie? Mm-hmm. She was jealous of Lizzie, too.
She was coming from a place of being jealous because Lizzie was the girl that matured faster than all of them. And one of the premise of this movie is that these girls all want to mature. They want to grow up, And so, what is a way to deal with that when you're a kid is to be mean when instead of maybe be accepting or understanding or say, hey, you've been through this. What's it like? Talk to this girl, be friends with her instead of deflecting and lashing out like that.
I think there was a really interesting moment when Margaret gets a postcard from Nancy and basically saying that she got her period and Margaret just rolls with it. And then when they're out to dinner and there's the reveal that, part of the rules of this group, right, that they're in, is you don't lie.
Well, you write down the boys that you like.
You got to tell us when something happens. So Nancy broke two of those rules right off the jump, right? Like, well, I guess, but at the restaurant. And I did
seeing Margaret.
Margaret broke it before anybody.
I guess that's true.
She didn't say that she liked moose. They all
liked moose.
Yeah.
And I like seeing the confliction on Margaret's face, like when Nancy knows that she screwed up, And now she has to face, like, she's facing Margaret in one of these times that, you know, as a father of daughters, like, it's a time that is scary and it's, you don't really know what's going on. And Margaret, her best friend, knows that Nancy screwed up. Nancy knows she screwed up. And then, like, you see that relationship kind of take a shift, right? Mm-hmm. Because Margaret ends up having a I don't know if her name is Lizzie. I was talking about Lizzie Kaplan from Mean Girls. Is the Lizzie that hang out with?
I can remember her name, the tall girl.
The tall, but
yeah,
but
I've been trying to look it up because I want to see how old she was. Because there was one thing where she was talking to her and she looked like she was 30. Like, I was
is
like,
it, yeah. Is it Laura Danker?
Could be.
I do think she looked legitimately old.
She
like,
did.
Not just
yeah,
but yeah.
Go ahead, Laura Danker is the character.
Okay,
I think that. Almost any particularly woman will be able to relate to this movie. And what it made me think of when I was in the same age, it was in sixth grade, we went to outdoor camp, it was called.
Yeah.
And it's cool. And I had started my period. And so I had tampons with me. And this girl, Brooke, thought it was going to be like so funny if showed everybody my tampons. And I remember being at outdoor camp just mortified.
Sure.
Yeah. Unlike the girls in this group that were like proud and wanted it, like for whatever reason, I was really embarrassed that I had started my period. And I just remember just being so embarrassed. And you think back, like, what was she like trying to, like, how insecure was she and probably nervous about getting hers, or, you know, what might have happened? But I think almost every woman has a story like that in their life about maturing and trying to get along with your peers and just all of this that happens. And I think this movie really captured that well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it's really interesting. I was telling Bella, you know, she's going to listen to this at some point in her life. She's like, I cannot believe you were just talking about my on the internet. But, you know, I think same deal where she'll be 12 and coming up, and, you know, she's had issues with her friends and they, you know, it's interesting. I was telling her, I was like, man, when I was a kid, when I was your age, if we had issues with our friends, we would punch each other in the face and fight and then it'd be over. And I
also think that's more of a boy thing.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean, right? Yeah. Like, so, like, I said, I'm not trying to be dismissive, but it's like it's hard for me to understand sometimes because as a boy growing up, we would just fight, and that's what we did, and then you were done with it. It was over. Where I feel like in my experience with a child is there's a little bit more going on. Like, things last a little bit longer, and they can get a little bit meaner. And I think that Nancy is on that path. Right. Like where Margaret Nancy's kind of on that path where she could be a mean girl. But their relationship does take an interesting turn when Nancy, they're at the, I guess it's like a, I don't know, like a homecoming or an end of the year kind of dance thing.
It's the school carnival, the end of the year.
Yeah. Like a school picnic
thing,
basically. And Margaret has gone out of her way to talk to
Laura Danker. Yeah.
Laura.
Yeah.
And apologize and kind of, yeah, right, and be friends with her. And there's a moment where Nancy kind of looks at Margaret and Laura dancing on this dance floor, and there's almost like not a look of disdain. Well, I guess I think it's like disdain mixed with hurt that Margaret would dance with her or be friends with her. And I think, you know, if there's a "Are you there, God, it's me, Margaret" too, I think there is a divergence in that friendship. In my maybe I'm not gonna write. I don't dare write a book for Judy Blume, but
yeah,
it's just so tricky that time of life because I remember just sort of going through friends a little bit too. Like
friends,
you were kind of trying out friends, and I remember it's church. They used to always say like choose your friends wisely, and I would be like, what? What does that mean? and I. This was when I was in high school. I had decided that this particular group of girls was like the friends I should choose. They were the good girls for whatever reason. I don't remember why. And so I sat at their table and tried to be friends. And they weren't like mean, but they just weren't you know, particularly interested in being my friends. And after like a couple of months, I was like, this is stupid. Like, why am I not being friends with the people who actually want to be friends with me?
Sure.
And, and yeah, then I went back to my friends and it was fine.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
It's like, tough, like, though, especially like today, like with, like, they always tell the kids that, like, oh, you're supposed to be accepting and
yeah.
and be friends with everyone. And I'm like, okay, I get the goal, you know, but sometimes there are people that you shouldn't be friends with, right?
Right.
Yeah. And it's
right.
like, and if you tell someone, especially girls, that they should be, you know, nice to everyone, well, there's going to be people that are going to really take advantage of that degree of grace, right?
Well,
and
yeah.
so
that's
you can
interesting when she says, I don't even know if I want to be friends with her
right
yeah
anymore
right,
she's
right,
sorting
right.
this out and what you're really when you're telling teens saying choose your friends wisely, because that is a very influential group, you know, on these when you're a teenager, you're really saying either you have to choose to not have friends or have these friends that they don't want to have. And you're, because it's not like you have the choice between like good friends and bad friends. Like, it's not, that's
oh,
not
see,
the
I kind of, like, that's, I kind of disagree only because I think we've all had that. I'm probably talking about myself in certain friend groups where they're just like, why do we hang out with that guy? Like, why?
Yeah.
You know, there was always that one or two guys where it's just like, are you friends with him? And they're like, no. And I'm like, are you, you know, so you're like, well, how, why is he still here?
Yeah.
And, but I'm just like, it is
yeah.
like once those, the, and you're, Rachel, I think you're absolutely right. Is there is, I have found in my own experience from like sixth grade and then to high school, there is like a shift in, like, you know, I remember my parents being like, are you hanging out with that kid? Like,
yeah.
you never talked to that kid in your life. And now you're like hanging out with him all the time. What's going on? But it's just like a, you know, it lasts for a couple months. Like, it's like a dating
yeah.
relationship and then they're gone.
You feel like it's the most important thing in the whole
yes.
world when you're that age. And it, and then, like, you finish high school and you're like, you never talk to those people, are they ever getting
right. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's funny. My son graduates from high school in, like, 2 weeks. And, like, he's so, like, tied up in certain things. And they have to keep, like grabbing him by the shoulders and be like, dude, in 3 weeks and one day, you aren't going to give a flying F about any of these people.
That
like,
is very true.
Like, you're going to go to college, and you're not, and like, when you're my age, you will struggle to remember their names.
That's true.
Know?
Your world
changes.
That is
changes. So funny
yeah.
you say that.
So
is,
quickly.
I remember I had two friends, right? There was three of us, Gabe Javier, Mike Godfrey, and me.
All right, Mr.
And
Popular.
That's, I'm just yeah. saying I had a bunch of friends.
Humble brag.
But I remember sitting in like a, you know, in eighth grade or whatever, and this teacher goes, look at your friends, right? I'll never forget this as long as I live. This teacher was like, look at your friends now. In 2 years, you will not be friends with them anymore. And of course, I'm sitting next to two guys where I'm just like, what do you mean? Like, we're going to be friends forever. I couldn't tell you where they are in their world right now. I know they're alive. But like, that just that changing of friendship and just trying to navigate that, because sometimes you don't even realize it's happening until you
yeah.
all go to different high schools, right? We all just split up and
yeah.
went about
yeah.
different lives.
And
so
now, thanks to Facebook, most of the people I was friends in high school with now I know are kind of gross. Right?
Well, and to the same point, too, it's funny when you think about like who the popular kids were in middle school and high
yeah,
school.
Yeah, right, right.
And if you
right.
see them now, you're just like, you're
like,
just,
don't peak early.
Yeah, yeah, you peak, brother.
Right. It's like,
yeah.
you threw
was,
that one
yeah.
touchdown in high school and that was it.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah.
I was telling my son, I give you the same advice for friendship as I do for your honeymoon night. Don't peak early. I want to piggyback off what you were saying about the line where she says, I don't even know if I want to be friends with her anymore. And I love the line read on that, because it could have easily been a huffy teenager or pre-teenager, mm-hmm. tweenager,
mm-hmm.
stamping her foot. Like, I don't even know if I... But it wasn't. Like, she was seriously conflicted.
Sure.
Like, she was seriously contemplating, like, do I want to be friends with her anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't like... I mean, she was certainly upset with her, but it wasn't like a reactionary act of anger. It was, she was seriously contemplating, like, where's
really,
this girl fit in
yep.
my friendship
do
circle?
I really
want
to do
and
this anymore
she? Yeah.
Right. Well, it's completely, which is completely believable and relatable, because that's, like we said, that's how it really works in real life. Is, and it's not necessarily even like you have to have a big falling out or a big fight, but right. people change. Mm-hmm. And at your age, you're figuring out who you are, right? What you're into. And that's why, like Joe was saying when he was young, and your parents are like, what? Where did they come from? Now you're hanging out with them 24/7, and all of a sudden, what happened to so-and-so? Because yeah. you're finding yourself, and you're figuring out who you want to be and who you are, and people, again, not because of a fight or a big falling out, but it's like, hey, I'm into whatever, and you're just like, I'm not, and you have less and less reason to hang out.
We call those summer vacation friends.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the people that come to town. Yeah, you always see that in movies too, right? Where it's like, I'll be back for summer, right?
And right, right. You get that in this, right? When at the end of the movie, when Margaret is leaving to go back to camp, mm-hmm. and she has that interaction, which I think is an absolutely adorable interaction.
But she leaves for summer. Moves. She'll be back right. for non-summer. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I guess that's fair. But he even says, he's like, let's hang out, when you get back. Yeah. And it was, I remember, just a look on her face. She played that.
Well, she skipped back to the
almost
house,
perfectly. Yeah, right. It was almost perfectly played.
It was cute because she was finally more comfortable in herself, where she was going. I mean, we clearly know she likes Moose the entire movie, but right. she didn't want to admit it to her friends because they all like the cool guy who we find out is a douche.
Almost always are.
Right.
I didn't think the cool guy was that bad, though, because you're expecting when they have the 2 minutes in heaven, you're thinking, oh, this cool guy is going to be a total jerk to
her. Sure.
Actually sweet.
He wasn't then. It was the thing.
But he was kind of a player. Like, he's,
He was also a total jerk to her at school. That's what told you who he was.
He made fun of her small boobs.
He said, pinch you to grow an inch, and you know where you need to grow that inch. I mean, what a total douche thing to say.
It's tough because kind of like that line.
But it's also 1970.
So that's the thing, right? Like, it can go, that line read can be one of two things. It could be a 11-year-old who's not thinking and making a joke and not realizing that it might hurt somebody's feelings, or it could be the flip side of that 11-year-old who's making the joke knowing that he's being mean.
It's funny, like, that line, the line's douchey. Like,
yes.
I'm not trying to, advocate for the line. The line's douchey. But because of the age of the characters, the line is almost like a choose-your-own-adventure novel, right? Like, it's like he says this thing to her that's douchey. So now one of two things can happen. You can either turn to page 34 where you go down the life path of being a douche,
right.
or you could turn to page 48 where you realize, like, oh, man, that was a really crappy thing to say, and you feel bad, and you try to correct it moving forward. Because we've all had those
sure.
moments where we've said something and
I've
we're
done it on
and
this
afterwards
podcast.
Yeah, and afterwards we're like, oh, looking back,
I did it in front of Bill Cott.
I would hope that the kid does that, but to me, at least the way that I read it and interpreted it, was he was the cool kid who, he was a player, and yeah, he was nice enough when he was getting to hook up with her, but
okay, well, he wasn't hooking up with her,
right?
They were just smooching.
They smooched a little bit.
Yeah.
I was grateful, though, that he made her first kiss, not awful.
That's
fair. Yeah, no, it was great for her, too, because she really comes out of her shell once she realizes, because she wasn't into boys. So at the beginning of the movie, when they join their secret club, which is, Nancy's porch eating cakes and having tea or whatever, it's
so
just
good.
A very,
so
very,
great.
Yeah, just a very basic little get-together they do after school, and they're talking about boys, and they're all very much like anti the boy stuff. Like, they're at that age where it's still kind of like,
ew.
I don't ever want to see anyone, have anyone see me naked, and this, and they're doing that whole, ooh, boys kind of thing. And then once she has that kiss, it's like her eyes open, and she does a really good job. The actor, who, Abby Ryder Forston, who, Joe, you probably would remember her from Ant-Man and the Wasp. She is Cassie.
But she's young Cassie.
She's right. She's the
Cassie. Original Cassie.
So good.
Yeah.
That line with the rabbit is one of the best MCU lines when Scott gives her the rabbit, and she's like, it's so ugly, I love him.
Yeah.
And runs away. Like, it's such a great, sweet line, and that movie's so
she's
good.
She's great.
But she was phenomenal in this role. I thought she was such a good actor, and she had to convey all those emotions of going through these very human and relatable things.
How old is she?
Oh, I bet she's only 12 or 13. Let me see if I can.
I think that might make things a little bit easier.
Certainly, you know? but also, how nerve-wracking would that be to, in front of
to
the entire world,
yeah,
and the most popular...
To be that age, going through that stuff, and then even if you're playing a character, you're still feel like you're talking about your period.
Right. Yeah, sure.
In front of the world, this is the most...
It looks like she's 15.
Okay, so she
that's still pretty close.
I filmed it at 14 at least.
Yeah.
And so, right. So, but yeah, she is so good in this role. And the fact that she has to do all this in front of a camera, again, stuff that she is or had just gone through, and has to be vulnerable. And the stuff with dealing with her friends, dealing with her parents, the terrible stuff with the grandparents and having this stuff forced upon her. I mean, right from the get, like Tom said, this movie opens up and her dad gets a job and they're moving from New York to New Jersey. So she has to leave her school, make new friends.
Especially at that age, man.
Right.
It's hard.
The new environment as she's figuring out who she is and who her friends are and everything. So she's thrust upon this. And that's the basis for her basically trying to discover these different religions and ultimately, before the very end of the movie, kind of disavowing religion and disavowing God.
Doesn't she have a line, though, where she's like, the only time I really feel God is when I'm alone? Am I making that up?
But it also ends with her praying. So she hasn't totally disavowed God. She's just kind of figuring out her own version.
Yeah,
like she's disavowed religion, but she seems to be still praying. And
well,
and
she stopped until God. The very end when things started going her way, which is, you know, she finally realized, like, oh, you have been listening because you answered my prayers. Like,
right.
But there's a point in the movie after the whole grandparents thing, like, things just keep happening and happening to this girl. But it's, again, very relatable. I mean, I know my grandpa used to have a saying, when it rains, it pours. And when you're that age, you do feel like everything and anything
the world is against
wrong,
you, man,
does go wrong. And so, yeah, she's talking.
And you also feel like you're the only one it's ever happened.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's, right.
Oh,
like,
God,
this
I
is
remember
all,
that.
It's, yeah. Because it's all new to you, you think it's all new.
Right. And we see her friends are
coming,
all struggling.
Coming right at you.
Well, yeah. And look at, we talked about Nancy, right? For instance. So Nancy likes the cool kid boy and has a crush. They said for years she's had a crush on this kid. And then Margaret shows up and gets to kiss him in the game. And then people are talking, their friend group, you know, they all want to have their period because they believe they'll become women. They'll be grown up when that happens. And then their other friend gets it. And so Nancy has now missed out on the kiss with the boy that she likes. She hasn't had her period yet. All this stuff's happening.
That's a great point.
That's why she lies. And it's not out of a mean-spirited way. She didn't do it to lie to them and be mean or to pull one over on them. She was feeling left out, and things were happening all around her to her friends, and she was feeling hurt, and not like a personal thing, like they attacked her, but she was feeling hurt and left out, and so she lied so she could have something. Oh, well, Margaret may have kissed the boy I like, but I had my period, and I know that she wants to, and so...
This is the part that's kind of mind-boggling, is how has this never been a movie before?
Well, like, she's very controversial, which is...
Oh.
And having never read any of the books and now seeing the movie and know it follows the book very closely, I have to ask the follow-up question, what the fuck is wrong with people?
Yeah. So,
1970.
Yeah, this is on a lot of banned book lists and
this
things
is?
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you want to see a great movie, the documentary, Judy Blume Forever, it was at Sundance, and it's on Prime now. It is so good. And she shares these letters that she would get. And some people she corresponded with for years. And that just blew my mind that there were, like, so few voices that so many kids were turning and literally writing her letters. Yeah. And she has some books that are more explicit than other books. I mean, she has some adult books. But in her young adult books, she has some that deal with topics like masturbation and some other things like that.
She reads an excerpt in that documentary. And I was like, whoa, okay, I can see how she'd be controversial.
But this book, I think... just people that are so insecure that they can't handle something that questions God, religion, that if for some reason discussing your period is taboo. I mean, I don't really understand that.
Yeah, bonkers,
I mean, things like that it's bonkers.
But this is 1972, so again, we have to step back and say it's a different time.
I don't disagree with that, but we've also got the 80s and 90s and 2000s where this
it's
movie
still
has
happening.
I do think it's amazing that very few of her books, if any, have gotten made into movies.
Especially one that I feel like is almost a center point of of a culture, that you put this book in front of any child over the age of 12 and they're going to know this book. Well, maybe not now that they're banning it.
Well, it's also so naive to think that because they banned this book, that kids are not going to talk about these things, seek these things out, having to deal with these things. When you watch that documentary, you realize how important books like this are to people and how we all have to deal with certain things. And obviously, this focuses on what these young girls go through at this time in their life.
Right, right.
But they need to talk to someone. They need to relate. They need to know that they're not alone. And it's so important. And when you hear those letters that people wrote her and how the author was, author was there to talk to them, like, Judy Blume not only wrote these books that I'm sure are life-saving books for a lot of people, but she was there to talk to them. She didn't just go, oh, I'm famous author Judy Blume. She was like, I'm your friend. Keep up with me. You know, write me back. What an amazing person to do this and fight for the right to have books and to tell the truth and to talk about relatable things. And, this book... even though I haven't read the book, but seeing how close the movie is, I can see why it was so important. And I just think, what a great book and a great author to do this for people.
Especially when, at the time, there was nothing like that out there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, like, now there's lots of things like that out there because she paved the way.
Exactly.
Yeah, but, right. But, like, back then, there was nothing like this.
It's a bold move.
I think it was all
for
boys. Right? Like, everything that would
But
be
even the boy
this...
books weren't going to be like this.
That's
they
true.
Yeah,
talk
I mean,
about...
Hardy Boys
That's
weren't going to talk
yeah,
about
Yeah, Hardy
it.
Boys, Nancy Drew, things like
right.
that. But something that was honest, authentic, frank, you didn't have much of it before this came out in 1970.
So. Give me the Hardy Boys book where they talk about nocturnal emissions.
I don't,
hey, man.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't exist.
I don't think. So... the thing is, you take
Hardy Boys and the Mystery of Doing Your Laundry for the First Time.
There you go.
No,
but I
got it.
I think it comes from an insecurity that people aren't secure enough in their beliefs and their faith and their life story, that somebody that's questioning or challenging it or insecure, that they can't handle that. They see that as a threat, which is really sad, because you can learn, like, Margaret questioning her religion doesn't affect my religion or faith at all. Like,
well, you know what
it
says.
It tells
people that it's okay to question your religion.
Right.
And the religious people do not want that. Oh, my daughter or son might go, wait a minute, I can choose? Oh, no, they want to force religion on them. And that's the worst part of religion, I think, is the forcing of it instead of, like I said, I think Margaret being able to discover these things and decide that she wants to be religious or what religion is so amazing. And these parents were scared.
It's also, from a theological standpoint, the stupidest thing people do, because especially at least coming from the realm of Christianity, if the whole concept is free will, if you're tricking people into believing in Jesus, if you're forcing them to believe in Jesus, well, then they're not really doing it out of free will. They're just telling you what you want to hear.
Right.
So you haven't really accomplished anything except soothing your own insecurities.
Are you saying that religions can be hypocritical, Tom?
Well, I mean, it's really going against... If you're sticking to the Bible, it's going against the Bible, because Jesus surrounded himself with publicans and sinners.
And, amen. And
Rachel, hold on. I thought you said Republicans, and I was like, that is hilarious.
Yeah.
But look,
surrounded
at this,
himself
though.
With republicans and sinners. It was.
How many times do you hear news reports and see people, whether it's protesting things or whatever, claiming to be Christian and not acting like it. You know what I mean? It's the practice what you preach, the hypocrisy. There's nothing inherently bad about religion. It's the way that some people apply and use religion. And that's the problem, is they're not following what they say they believe in, but they're not actually following the book.
Well, and that's
Rachel,
what
was
Margaret
there,
is pushing up against.
Yeah.
Well, was there a moment, without digging too deep, was there a moment in your life where you had a crisis of faith? Like, is this where I want to be? Is this what I want to do?
It was actually, like, fairly recently.
Okay.
that I was always really, really strong enough. It was just the pandemic that for whatever reason kind of made me question whether, because I went for like a year without going to church because
it might kill you.
Quarantine, yeah.
Right.
And that did kind of change me to be like, oh, maybe this thing that I just kind of did because I did believe, but it was just part of my life. And all of a sudden, I've gotten along fine for a year without it. And so it makes you kind of question what it is that you're doing here. But yeah, I was pretty solid in my conversion to my faith as a teenager. And that helped me avoid a lot of snares and a lot of difficulties. So I'm grateful for that. But yeah, I think that everybody has like moments where they're like, wait, what is going on here?
Sure.
Well,
sure.
That's and what's great about this movie is that I think there's something to relate to. Again, it doesn't matter how you identify, religious or not. Being a kid, if you were a kid, which everyone who is no longer a kid has been at one point, right? Yeah. I mean, ultra relatable. There is something in this movie for everybody, and even the parents, even if you're so far disconnected, not that you can't think back, but look at the parents. If you are a parent, well, then there you go, or a relationship, or dealing with your parents, right? There is something in this movie that I think everyone can relate to. So
I think the super interesting that I just thought about is there is a point when you are – it's a transition point from kid to like teenager, right? And you almost, in my experience, you almost become, you can see yourself starting to become self-aware where you, when you're, what, like 3 to 10, you don't question anything, right? Like your parents tell you something, you're like, all right, cool, like I'm with you. But there's a line where you do start to question things and you start to think for yourself. And it's interesting to watch this movie and you can see it happen to Margaret. Like you can see her very happy leaving in the very beginning when she's leaving camp and everything's great. And then when she comes home and they find out that she is moving, you can almost see that switch flip.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the movie is her asking questions like, why don't we talk to your parents? Why don't we go to church? Why don't we? So I do think that's really interesting to watch that happen.
I think some of that is because I don't think the movie fully explores this, but I kind of feel like maybe that's a moment of for her where she realizes that, like, oh, my parents aren't perfect, because that was not a very good way to do that.
No.
Like, welcome home from camp. You don't live here anymore.
Right? I feel like she's like, hey, what are those boxes?
But I also think that in 1970, that like parents didn't take into account kids' feelings in the same way. I mean, not everyone does today, obviously, but
we know
they
a lot
were,
more now.
Yeah, yeah, like people
true.
Are
I was
much
talking
more apt
to my
to do that.
I was talking to my parents about, because there was a time when I was bullied pretty bad in elementary school, and my parents took me out and put me in private school, and I were asking, well, why didn't you consider just having me homeschool? And they were like, we didn't even know that was a thing. Like, we didn't even know. We thought you could be arrested for doing that. Like,
yeah.
We didn't even know. I do think we're like, parents are aware now more of like just so many more options of like how you can raise your kids than they were even, you know, in 1970.
It is funny. I remember in like, you know, in grade school when a new kid would show up and they're like, oh, yeah, he was homeschooled. And we're like, what was that weirdo?
Right.
He was homeschooled.
Joe had a similar situation where they had to pull him out of school because he was bullying.
They
put him in school with a lot of tougher kids to teach him a lesson.
Oh, I got taught a lesson. There's nothing like being a 4'2" skinny kid, like superheroes and stuff. It was great.
I had a similar situation though, where like I was pulled out of school and put in a private school as well. And it's funny because I was pulled out of public school and put in a Catholic school, but we weren't Catholic. And so suddenly I was going to have religion classes
every day.
And I'm just like, whatever, like, okay. Like, and honestly, like, I'm glad I went. Like, I'm not religious at all. I'm certainly not Catholic, but like, it was a much better school. And I feel like in retrospect, I learned a lot more going to that school than if I had stayed in a public school, at least the public school that I would have went to.
Yeah.
There are a lot of really fun, cute moments in this movie. It's a fun movie. I think it's important for kids to see this, to know they're not alone and other people are going through this stuff. But a lot of really fun moments in this movie. Like, that line that when they're all like, we must increase our bust, that thing, is that from this book? Because I've heard that before as like a joke and other things. Like, did she create that saying?
I don't know if she created it, but yeah.
At the time, maybe people did say that.
I don't know any girls that did that, but who knows? Maybe I just didn't have as creative of friends.
It was pretty funny when they come back the second time and they have seen the Playboy and they like double down
But they all come back and they're chanting it together. Right. A really funny moment. Or that moment where they all get the training bras and then Nancy's like, What size are you? And they don't have sizes because they get this grody. I think it's just like, I'm a some tiny number double A or whatever, like it just, but she's so proud of it. And there's like many of these funny moments where they're all trying to be so grown up and they're kids, but it really highlights what we all go through, what all kids go through. They're in such a rush to grow up and it's like,
slow down, kid.
Yeah, as parents, you're like, enjoy the moment when you're kids because there's so much responsibility. And obviously, we all know what it's like to be grown up now. But it's just so true that when you're a kid, you cannot wait. And they're in such a rush for it.
Oh, yeah.
I think one of the things this movie touches on that I think is unique to girls is the conundrum and the paradox of that developmental stage of you want to reach the next level, but everybody hits it at a different time, and like the girls that haven't hit it yet are jealous of the girls that have hit it. But a lot of the girls who have hit it really regret it because they start to see how differently the world, especially men and boys, treat them once they look more grown up. And it's not fun or cool.
No.
And especially when, you know, like when you're the Laura Danker character, like they didn't really say it, but she's got this air of sadness about her.
And, oh, absolutely.
And I don't feel like it's just because the other girls are mean to her. I think it's because a lot of the boys and even men are treating her differently,
sure.
And she doesn't understand it or like it. And so, on the one hand, the kids don't trust her anymore because she's not one of them, quote unquote, but the boys are probably doing and saying some very weird and off-putting things.
Mm-hmm. She's being stared at. She's, no matter what, from either side and for those different reasons, she's getting stared at and pointed out the whole time. And so I do think the way that character is portrayed is, once again, very important and very relatable because ultimately these girls, these in our core friend group, are jealous of her, but the way they handle that is by being mean because they don't know how to deal with their own insecurities.
I think the way Nancy handles it and the other three just kind of go along with it, right? Because I mean, there is a point at the end, like I said, at the end where Margaret breaks away from that and befriends.
But not before she's mean to her, which gets you that great scene.
That's right.
And she's mean to her by doing, you know, like kind of falling into that same trap, right? Well, if you look like a grown-up, you must be doing grown-up things, which means you're letting the boys touch you and, you know. And also even the idea that she would, quote-unquote, let them, right? Like, you know, like even if it was occurring,
right?
Like, how much of that was really with her
consent,
enthusiastic consent,
right?
You know,
It kind of reminds me of there's an old episode of The Cosby Show where Claire would take the girls out for Women's Day when they started their period. Well, Rudy starts her period, and so she's kind of excited that, oh, we can have Women's Day. And Rudy doesn't want anything to do with it. And she's like, I don't want to go, I don't want to have our special day. And she was like, why don't you want to do it? And she says, because it was awful. It's not fun at all.
It is funny, like, how much some girls, like, are waiting for this moment with such eager anticipation when every woman I've ever had in my life as a grown-up is like, this is the worst. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
I think you get a lot of that through the mom, right? Rachel McAdams says the funny stuff, like, when Margaret asks for a bra, and again, I think the actor is so good with this, the way she's, like, so closed off, she's, like, really quick, she's like, I want a bra. And she like doesn't really want to talk about it. And the mom is like, "Are you sure? Because like we'll get you one, but like it's horrible. Like you should maybe not for as long as you can." And then that really cute moment with the both of them when she does the training bra thing or whatever, and she's like, how is it? And she's like, I can't wait to get this off. And it's so you get those really relatable moments where, again, it's like you see that, like, the kids only want these things because it means they're grown up. It's the next step.
They but want they the milestone.
Yeah, they don't really understand the I don't know if you say responsibility, but the things that come along with it, the inconveniences and all that. But they want to be grown up, and that's kids, right? Kids want to be grown up, and they don't really understand what it means. And so I just think it was really relatable and really believable the way that these kids were acting through all this. And I think the way the parents handle it was really good. Yeah. Like, it was a really healthy relationship between Rachel McAdams and Benny Safdie, and the way that they parented. And you know, and it's not perfect, but who is, right? Like, with... You know, she kind of did the selfish thing with her parents, but then again, she's hurting. She was disowned from her parents for 14 years, which has to be really hard, whether they're right or wrong. They say in the movie, they're the only parents she has. It's her parents. And so I can understand a character maybe being a little selfish because she's human. And she says, like, that's my parents and I've been without them. And
well, I think it's Margaret that kicks that off, right? Where she's like, why don't we talk to our parents? And then Rachel McAdams has to have that awkward conversation with an 11-year-old where it's like, I'm not going to lie to you, I'll tell you the truth. And then that kind of sparks something in her, and she writes him that letter, and then that opens the door. So it is, Margaret does flick the match, basically, and that's how we end up here. And sometimes it sucks.
Yeah, for sure. Before we wrap up, do we know how this movie did? Over the weekend?
I hope it did.
I fear
well.
Not well.
Oh, dang.
Oh, really?
Just because it's because it's a small movie.
Oh, like
it's,
sure, sure.
You know what I mean? And people are so used to going to the theater for the big, giant spectacles.
Like next week?
And this isn't a spectacle kind of movie.
Yeah, I hope more people, especially
with
people...
I mean, I hope it does well.
With people reviewing it and talking about it in such a positive way, I do really think this is an important movie for the kids that are this age to read the book, to see the movie. It's handled so well. It has a $30 million budget, so it wasn't terribly high.
Yeah.
I didn't see the weekend estimate. I'll kind of...
It says it's projected gross $7 to $9 million opening weekend.
Okay. Yeah, so on a 30. I mean, not terrible for at least it's a small budget. I want to say I do on a technical level. I really like how the movie felt like the 70s. We talked about this a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes
I was there. It did.
But we talk a lot of times how movies look too slick and too polished. If you want to make an 80s B movie, don't make it look like a 2020s digital movie. And so, like, this movie had the color grading where it felt like the 70s, the outfits. I mean, it did have the car thing.
I know.
I thought of Joe, you know, based on Tom's thing, where the cars were immaculate. Everyone had a brand new 1970s car.
We should probably explain to Rachel, one of my pet peeves can I say a period piece? In old movies that take place in the past. That whenever you see cars, I will say this to you, you will never be able to unsee it. Whenever you see cars, they always look like they just drove off the showroom floor.
Yeah.
Because they go to the car collector clubs to get the cars from that era. If it's 1970, you never see like a beat up 58 Pontiac, which is what a lot of people would still be driving. It's like everything is from like 67 to 70, and it looks brand spanking new.
Especially in a time period where people weren't constantly getting new cars, where now everyone's like, I need the new car.
Yeah.
But right in the opening, when they go from New York to New Jersey and they're showing all the establishing shots, and it's just like, oh, brand new 70s car. Everyone had a brand new car. It looks like the projection got revised to $13 million. So, I mean, that's a little bit better. They found a few more million. I mean, this thing has a 99...
I mean, almost halfway to your budget on opening weekend for a movie that a good chunk of the public is going to go, it's for girls.
Sure.
Right. I mean, it's never going to be a blockbuster, but I think that this movie will find a life on digital and home video or streaming, wherever it ends up streaming. It is so good. And it has a 99%. It only has one negative review.
It's that one guy, isn't it?
No, it's not. No. It's Amy Nicholson from Unspooled, which I was really surprised.
Really?
She's the one negative review. And you know what? She gave it a C+, which can go fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, and she gave it rotten. You choose. It's a C+, which is... you can say that's fresh if you choose
to.
So
read her review and see what she's had to say.
I was really shocked because I'm like, who is it? Armand White? I'm like, who is right. who is the one that's giving this a negative? But yeah, I'm like, Amy Nicholson and C+. So
that
I
is
still
surprising.
It's basically 100% fresh.
Yeah.
So critically, it's great. It's such a cute movie and so believable and sincere. It really gives me a new appreciation for her. I never read Judy Blume books and I never knew much about her, but man, I now realize how important she was, especially after that documentary and seeing this movie, and I could not recommend this highly enough.
I gave it a 10 out of 10. I gave it a perfect score. I absolutely loved it. It made me cry whenever they would show the grandma. It made me miss my grandma.
Sure.
And I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, growing up in the 70s, like, books were very gendered, so I was an avid reader, but I just would never even consider a Judy Blume book because, like, well, that was in the girl section of the library.
Sure. Which is how things used to be. And I'm not saying they're perfect now, but obviously there's a lot more crossover. But yeah, back then, I mean, even in the 90s, there's girl stuff and boy stuff. I mean, you just didn't have that type of a crossover, you know, and it's kind of cool now to see that there's more, because like Judy Blume says in that documentary, again, I'll say it again, it's like we all live together and it's great to understand each other and what we each have to go through. And I think that's in general, not just kids, not just boys and girls or however you identify, but humanity, right? Like have some empathy, have some understanding of what we all go through, because at the end of the day, we are all human, all going through good times and bad. And sometimes it seems like it's a lot more bad than good. But as we see, like in this movie is a perfect representation of that, like things will turn around. Keep positive. Good things will happen. It may seem like they're all bad forever, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. I guess on that note, let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter @Joy. What happened to my microphone? On the Twitter @JoyButts, BUTTS21. Also, I'm on Letterboxd at the same name.
They say don't go into the light, but you, Joe, need to go towards the red light on the
microphone.
I know,
microphone. Yeah. Like my hand kept turning. That was
yeah, just keep going back and forth. That's perfect for acoustics. This is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter @KevinRBrackett.
And Rachel, where can they find you and your stuff?
You can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all over social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes, and also at the Hallmarkies Podcast.
Awesome. And this is Tom. You can find me on Twitter @RogerKubert or on Facebook @Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon, Patreon.com/RealSpoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, I forgot to write an outro too.
So,
perfect.
You've been warned. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.